Chapter 20. On a Broken Road. Women, Matt declared as he rode Pips down the dusty little used road, are like mules. He frowned. Wait, no, goats. Women are like goats. Except every flaming one thinks she's a horse instead and a prized racing mare to boot. Do you understand me, Telmanis?
Pure poetry, Matt, Telmanis said,
tamping the tobacco down into his pipe. Matt flicked his reins, Pips continuing to plod along. Tall three-needle pines lined the sides of the stone roadway. They'd been lucky to find this ancient road, which must have been made before the breaking. It was mostly overgrown, the stones shattered in many places, large sections of the roadway just, well, just gone. Sapling pines had begun to sprout at the sides of the roadway and between rocks, miniature versions of their towering fathers above. The path was wide, if very rough, which was good. Matt had 7,000 men with him, all mounted, and they'd been riding hard in the little under a week they'd spent traveling since sending Tuon back to Abu Dhar.
Reasoning with a woman is impossible, Matt continued, eyes forward. It's like, well, reasoning with a woman is like sitting down to a friendly game of dice. Only the woman refuses to acknowledge the basic bloody rules of the game. A man, he'll cheat you, but he'll do it honestly. He'll use loaded dice so that you think you're losing by chance. And if you aren't clever enough to spot what he's doing, then maybe he deserves to take your coin, and that's that. A woman, though, she'll sit down to that same game, and she'll smile and act like she's going to play. Only when it's her turn to throw, she'll toss a pair of her own dice that are blank on all six sides. Not a single pip showing. She'll inspect her throw, then she'll look up at you and say, "Clearly, I just won." Now you'll scratch your head and look at the dice. Then you'll look up at her, then down at the dice again. "But there aren't any pips on these dice," you'll say. "Yes, there are," she'll say. "And both dice rolled a one." "That's exactly the number you need to win," you'll say. "What a coincidence," she'll reply. Then begin to scoop up your coins. And you'll sit there trying to wrap your head about what just happened, and you realize something. A pair of ones isn't the winning throw. Not when you threw a six on your turn. That means she needed a pair of twos instead. Excitedly, you'll explain what you've discovered. Only then, do you know what she'll do?
No idea, Matt, Telmanis replied, chewing on his pipe, a thin wisp of smoke curling out of the bowl.
Then she'll reach over, Matt said, and rub the blank faces of her dice, and then, with a perfectly straight face, she'll say, "I'm sorry. There was a spot of dirt on the dice. Clearly you can see that they actually came up as twos." And she'll believe it. She'll bloody believe it.
Incredible, Telmanis said.
Only that's not the end of it.
I had presumed that it wouldn't be, Matt.
She scoops up all of your coins, Matt said, gesturing with one hand, the other steadying his Ashandarai across his saddle. And then every other woman in the room will come over and congratulate her on throwing that pair of twos. The more you complain, the more of those bloody women will join the argument. You'll be outnumbered in a moment, and each of those women will explain to you how those dice clearly read twos, and how you really need to stop behaving like a child. Every single flaming one of them will see the twos. Even the prudish woman who has hated your woman from birth, since your woman's granny stole the other woman's granny's honey cake recipe when they were both maids. That woman will side against you.
They are nefarious creatures indeed, Telmanis said, voice flat and even.
Telmanis rarely smiled.
By the time they're done, Matt continued, almost more to himself, you'll be left with no coin, several lists worth of errands to run, and what clothing to wear, and a splitting headache. You'll sit there and stare at the table and begin to wonder, just maybe, if those dice didn't read twos after all. If only to preserve what's left of your sanity. That's what it's like to reason with a woman, I tell you.
And you did so. At length.
You aren't making sport of me, are you?
Why, Matt, the Kyrianan said. You know I'd never do such a thing.
Too bad, Matt muttered, glancing at him suspiciously. I could use a laugh. He looked over his shoulder.
Bannon! Where on the Dark One's blistered backside are we?
The fat former horse thief looked up.
He rode a short distance behind Matt, and he carried a map of the area, unrolled and folded across a board so he could read it in the saddle. He'd been poring over the bloody thing the better half of the morning. Matt had asked him to get them through Murundi quietly, not get them lost in the mountains for months.
"That's Blinder's Peak," Bannon said, gesturing with a pudgy finger toward a flat-topped mountain just barely visible over the tips of the pines. "At least I think it is. It might be Mount Sardlin."
The squat hill didn't look like much of a mountain. It barely had any snow atop it. Of course, few mountains in this area were impressive, not compared to the mountains of mist back near the two rivers. Here, northeast of the Damona Range, the landscape fell into a grouping of low foothills. It was difficult terrain, but navigable, if one were determined. And Matt was determined. Determined not to be pinned in by the Seanchan again, determined not to be seen by any who didn't have to know he was there. He'd paid the butcher too much so far. He wanted out of this hangman's noose of a country.
"Well," Matt said, reining Pips back to ride beside Bannon, "which of those mountains is it? Maybe we should go ask Master Roy Dell again."
The map belonged to the master mapmaker. It was only because of his presence that they'd been able to find this roadway in the first place. But Bannon insisted on being the one to guide the troop. A mapmaker wasn't the same thing as a scout. You didn't have a dusty cartographer ride out and lead the way for you, Bannon insisted. In truth, Master Roy Dell didn't have a lot of experience being a guide. He was a scholar, an academic. He could explain a map for you perfectly, but he had as much trouble as Bannon making sense of where they were, since this roadway was so disjointed and broken, the pines high enough to obscure landmarks, the hilltops all nearly identical. Of course, there was also the fact that Bannon seemed threatened by the presence of the mapmaker, as if he were worried about being unseated from his position guiding Matt and the band. Matt had never expected such an emotion from the overweight horse thief. It might have been enough to make him amused, if they weren't lost so much of the flaming time. Bannon scowled.
"I think that has to be Mount Sardlin. Yes, it's gotta be.
Which means..."
"Which means we keep heading along the roadway," Bannon said.
"The same thing I told you an hour ago. We can't bloody march an army through a forest this thick now, can we? That means staying on the stones."
"I'm just asking," Matt said, pulling down the brim of his hat against the sun. "A commander's got to ask things like this."
"I should ride ahead," Bannon said, scowling again. He was fond of scowls. "If that is Mount Sardlin, then there should be a village of fair size an hour or two further along. I might be able to spot it from the next rise."
"Go then," Matt said. They had advance scouts out, of course, but none of them were as good as Bannon. Despite his size, the man could sneak close enough to an enemy fortification to count the whiskers in the camp guard's beards and never be seen. He'd probably make off with their stew, too. Bannon shook his head as he regarded the map again.
"Actually," he muttered, "now that I think about it, maybe that's Favlin Mountain."
He set off at a trot before Matt could object. Matt sighed, healing Pips to catch up to Telmanis. The Kyrianan shook his head. He could be an intense one, Telmanis. Early in their association, Matt had assumed him to be stern, unable to have fun. He was learning better. Telmanis wasn't stern, he was just reserved. But at times there seemed to be a twinkle in the nobleman's eyes, as if he were laughing at the world, despite that set jaw and his unsmiling lips. Today he wore a red coat trimmed with gold, and his forehead was shaved and powdered after Kyrian fashion. It looked bloody ridiculous, but who was Matt to judge? Telmanis might have terrible fashion sense, but he was a loyal officer and a good man. Besides, he had excellent taste in wine.
"Don't look so glum, Matt," Telmanis said, puffing on his gold-rimmed pipe.
Where'd he gotten that, anyway? Matt didn't remember him having it before.
"Your men have full bellies, full pockets, and they just won a great victory. Not much more than that a soldier can ask for."
"We buried 1,000 men, Matt said. "That's no victory." The memories in his head, the ones that weren't his, said he should be proud. The battle had gone well. But there were still those dead who had depended on him.
There are always losses, Telmanis said. You can't let them eat you up, Matt. It happens.
There aren't losses when you don't fight in the first place.
Then why ride to battle so often?
I only fight when I can't avoid it, Matt snapped. Blood and bloody ashes, he only fought when he had to. When they trapped him. Why did that seem to happen every time he turned around?
Whatever you say, Matt,
Telmanis said, taking out his pipe and pointing it at Matt knowingly.
But something's got you on edge, and it isn't the men we lost.
Flaming noblemen. Even the ones you could stand, like Telmanis, always thought they knew so much. Of course, Matt was now a nobleman himself. Don't think about that, he told himself.
Telmanis had spent a few days calling Matt Your Highness until Matt had lost his temper and yelled at the man. Kyrianen could be such sticklers for rank. When Matt had first realized what his marriage to Tuon meant, he'd laughed, but it had been the laughter of incredulous pain. And men called him lucky. Well, why couldn't his luck have helped him avoid this fate? Bloody Prince of the Ravens? What did that mean? Well, right now he had to worry about his men. He glanced over his shoulder, looking along the ranks of cavalrymen, with crossbowmen riding behind. There were thousands of both, though Matt had ordered their banners stowed. They weren't likely to pass many travelers on this backwater path, but if anyone did see them, he didn't want their tongues wagging. Would the Shaun Chen chase him? He and Tuon both knew they were on opposing sides now, and she'd seen what his army could do. Did she love him? He was married to her, but Shaun Chen didn't think like regular people. She'd stayed in his possession, enduring captivity, never running. But he had little doubt that she'd move against him if she thought it best for her empire. Yes, she'd send men after him, though potential pursuit didn't trouble him half as much as the worry that she might not make it back to Ebu Dar safely. Someone had offered a very large pile of coin for Tuon's head. That Shaun Chen traitor, the leader of the army Matt had destroyed. Had he been working alone? Were there others? What had Matt released Tuon into? The questions haunted him.
Should I have let her go, do you think? Matt found himself asking.
Telmanis shrugged.
You gave your word, Matt, and I think that rather large Shaun Chen fellow with the determined eyes and the black armor wouldn't have reacted well if you'd tried to keep her.
She could still be in danger, Matt said, almost to himself, still looking backward. I shouldn't have let her out of my sight, fool woman.
Matt, Telmanis said, pointing at him with the pipe again. I'm surprised at you. Why, you're starting to sound downright husbandly.
That gave Matt a start. He twisted around in Pip's saddle. What was that? What does that mean?
Nothing, Matt, Telmanis said hurriedly. Just that, the way you're mooning after her,
I am not mooning, Matt snapped, pulling the lip of his hat down, then adjusting his scarf. His medallion was a comfortable weight around his neck. I'm just worried, that's all. She knows a lot about the band, and she could give away our strengths.
Telmanis shrugged, puffing his pipe. They rode for a time in silence. The pine needles soughed in the wind, and Matt occasionally heard women's laughter from behind, where the Aes Sedai rode in a little cluster. For all the fact that they didn't like one another, they usually got along just fine when others could see them. But, as he'd said to Telmanis, women were only enemies with one another as long as there wasn't a man around to gang up on. The sun was marked by a blazing patch of clouds. Matt hadn't seen pure sunlight in days. He hadn't seen Tuon in as long either. The two events seemed paired in his head. Was there a connection?
Bloody fool, he thought to himself. Next you'll start thinking like her, reading portents into every little thing, looking for symbols and meaning every time a rabbit runs across your path or a horse lets wind.
That kind of fortune-telling was all nonsense. Though he had to admit, he now cringed every time he heard an owl hoot twice.
Have you ever loved a woman, Telmanis? Matt found himself asking.
Several, the short man replied, riding with pipe smoke curling behind him.
Ever consider marrying one of them?
No, thank the light, Telmanis said.
Then, apparently, he thought better of what he'd just said.
I mean, it wasn't right for me at the time, Matt. But I'm certain it will work out fine for you.
Matt scowled. If Tuon was going to bloody finally decide to go through with the marriage, couldn't she have picked a time when others couldn't hear?
But no.
She'd gone and spoken in front of everyone, including the Aes Sedai. That meant Matt had been doomed. Aes Sedai were great at keeping secrets unless those secrets could in any way embarrass or inconvenience Matrim Cawthon. Then, you could be certain, the news would be spread through the entire camp in a day's time, and likely be known 3 villages down the road as well. His own bloody mother, leagues and leagues away, had probably heard the news by now.
I'm not giving up gambling, Matt muttered, or drinking.
So I believe you've told me, Talmana said. 3 or 4 times so far. I half believe that if I were to peek into your tent at night, I'd find you mumbling it in your sleep. I'm going to keep bloody gambling and drinking. Where's my bloody drink? Anyone want to gamble for it?
He said it with a perfectly straight face, but once again there was that hint of a smile in his eyes, if you knew just where to look.
I just want to make sure everyone knows, Matt said. I don't want anyone to start thinking I'm getting soft just because of, you know.
Talmanis shot him a consoling look.
You won't go soft just because you got married, Matt. Why, some of the great captains themselves are married, I believe. Davram Bashir is for certain, and Rodol Aitoralda. No, you won't go soft because you're married.
Matt nodded sharply.
Good, that was settled.
You might go boring, though, Talmanis noted.
All right, that's it, Matt declared. Next village we find, we're going to go dicing at the tavern. You and me.
Talmanis grimaced.
With the kind of third-rate wine these little mountain villages have? Please, Matt. Next you'll be wanting me to drink ale.
No arguing.
Matt glanced over his shoulder as he heard familiar voices. Olver, ears sticking out to the sides, diminutive face as ugly as any Matt had seen, sat astride Wind, chatting with Noel, who rode beside him on a bony gelding. The gnarled old man was nodding appreciatively to what Olver was saying. The little boy looked astonishingly solemn, and was undoubtedly explaining yet another of his theories on how to best sneak into the Tower of Genji.
Who now? Talmanis said. There's Vanin.
Matt turned to spot a rider approaching along the rocky path ahead. Vanin always looked so ridiculous, perched like a melon atop the back of his horse, his feet sticking out to the sides. But the man could ride, there was no doubting that.
It is Mount Sardlon,
Vanin proclaimed as he rode up to them, wiping his sweaty, balding brow.
The village is just ahead. It's called Hinderstap on the map. These are bloody good maps, he added grudgingly.
Matt exhaled in relief. He'd begun to think that they might end up wandering these mountains until the last battle came and went.
Great, he began. We can...
A village?
A curt female voice demanded. Matt turned with a sigh as 3 riders forced their way up to the front of the column. Talmanis reluctantly raised a hand to the soldiers behind, halting the march as the Aes Sedai descended on poor Vanin. The rotund man squatted down in his saddle, looking for all the world as though he'd rather have been discovered stealing horses, and therefore on his way to execution, than have to sit there and be interrogated by Aes Sedai. Jolene led the pack. Once, Matt might have described her as a pretty girl, with her slender figure and large, inviting brown eyes. But that ageless Aes Sedai face was an instant warning for him now. No, he wouldn't dare think of the green as pretty now. Begin letting yourself think of Aes Sedai as pretty, and in 2 clicks of the tongue you'd find yourself wrapped around her finger and hopping at her command. Why, Jolene had already hinted that she'd like to have Matt as a warder. Was she still sore at him because he'd paddled her? She couldn't hurt him with the power, of course, even without his medallion, since Aes Sedai were sworn not to use the power to kill except in very specific instances. But he was no fool. He'd noticed that those oaths of theirs didn't say anything about using knives. The 2 with Jolene were Edesina of the Yellow Aja and Teslin of the Red. Edesina was pleasant enough to look at, save for that ageless face, but Teslin was about as appetizing as a stick. Sharp of face, the Ilianar woman was bony and scrappy, like an aged cat left too long on its own.
but she seemed to have a good head on her shoulders from what Matt had seen, and he'd found her treating him with some measure of respect sometimes. Respect from a Red? Imagine that. Still, from the way each of those Aes Sedai looked at Matt in turn as they reached the front of the line, you'd never know that they owed him their lives. That was the way of it with women. Save her life and she'd inevitably claim that she'd been about to escape on her own, and therefore owed you nothing. Half the time she'd berate you for messing up her supposed plans. Why did he bother? One of these days, burn him, he was going to get smart and leave the next lot crying in their chains.
What was this? Jolene demanded of Vannon. You've finally determined where we are?
Bloody well have, Vannon said, then unabashedly scratched himself. Good man, Vannon. Matt smiled. Treated all people the same, Vannon did. Aes Sedai and all. Jolene stared Vannon straight in the eyes, looming like a gargoyle atop some lord's mansion stonework. Vannon actually cringed, then wilted, then finally looked downward, abashed.
I mean, I have indeed, Jolene Sedai.
Matt felt his smile fade.
Burn it all, Vannon. Excellent, Jolene said. And there is a village ahead, I heard. Finally, perhaps, we'll find a decent inn. I could use something other than the fare these ruffians of Cawthon's call food.
Here now, Matt said. That isn't...
How far do we be from Camelin, Master Cawthon? Teslin cut in. She did her best to ignore Jolene. The two of them seemed at one another's throats lately, in the most cool-faced and outwardly amiable of ways, of course. Aes Sedai didn't squabble. He'd gotten a talking to once for calling their discussions squabbles. Never mind that Matt had sisters and knew what a good squabble sounded like.
What did you say earlier, Vannon? Matt asked, looking at him. That we're about 200 leagues from Camelin? Vannon nodded. The plan was to head for Camelin first, as he needed to meet up with Estion and Darid and secure needed information and supplies. After that, he could make good on his promise to Tom. The Tower of Genji would have to wait a few more weeks.
200 leagues, Teslin said. How long until we arrive, then?
Well, I guess that depends, Vannon said. I could probably make 200 leagues in a little over a week if I were going alone with a couple of good horses to ride in shifts and was crossing familiar terrain. The whole army, though? Through these hills using a broken roadway? 20 days, I'd say. Maybe longer.
Jolene glanced at Matt.
We aren't leaving the band behind, Matt said. Not an option, Jolene.
She looked away, her expression dissatisfied.
You're welcome to go on your own, Matt said. That goes for each of you. You Aes Sedai aren't my prisoners. Leave any time you want, so long as you head north. I won't risk you heading back to be taken by Seanchan.
What would it be like, traveling with just the band again, not an Aes Sedai in sight?
Ah, if only.
Teslin looked thoughtful. Jolene glanced at her, but the Red didn't give any indication if she'd be willing to leave or not. Edesina, however, hesitated, then nodded to Jolene. She was willing.
Very well, Jolene said to Matt with a haughty air. It would be good to be away from your crudeness, Cawthon. Prepare for us, say, 20 mounts, and we shall be off.
20?
Matt asked.
Yes, Jolene said. Your man here mentioned that he'd need 2 horses to make the trip in a reasonable amount of time, so that he could remount, presumably, when one of the beasts grew tired.
I count 2 of you, Matt said, his anger rising.
That means 4 horses. I figured you'd be smart enough to do that math, Jolene.
And then, softer, he added, if just barely. Jolene's eyes opened wide and Edesina's expression was painted with shock. Teslin gave him a shocked glance, seeming disappointed. To the side, Telmanis just lowered his pipe and whistled quietly.
That medallion of yours makes you impudent, Matrim Cawthon, Jolene said coldly.
My mouth makes me impudent, Jolene, Matt replied with a sigh, fingering the medallion hidden beneath his loosely tied shirt. The medallion just makes me truthful. I believe you were going to explain why you need to take 20 of my horses, when I barely have enough for my men as it is.
2 each for Edesina and myself, Jolene said stiffly. 2 each for the former Suldam.
You don't presume that I'm going to leave them behind to be corrupted by your little band here?
To Suldam, Matt said, ignoring the barb. That's 8 horses.
2 for Satala. I assume she'll want to be away from all of this with us.
10.
2 more for Teslin, Jolene said. She will undoubtedly want to go with us, though she currently has nothing to say on the matter. And we'll need about 4 pack animals worth to carry our things. They'll have to trade their burdens too, so 4 more for that. 20.
Which you'll feed how? Matt asked. If you're riding that hard, you won't have time to graze your horses. There's barely anything for them to eat these days anyway. That had proven a big problem. The spring grass wasn't coming in. The meadows they passed were brown with fallen leaves, the dead winter weeds pressed flat by snow, barely a new shoot of grass or weed. Horses could feed on the dead leaves and winter grass, of course, but wild deer and other animals had been active, eating down whatever they could find. If the land didn't decide to start blooming soon, well, they were in for a difficult summer. But that was another problem entirely.
We will need you to give us feed, of course, Jolene said. And some coin for inns.
And who is going to take care of all those horses? You're going to brush them down each night, check their hooves, see that their feed is properly measured?
I suppose we should take a handful of your soldiers with us, Jolene said, sounding dissatisfied. A necessary inconvenience.
The only thing that is necessary, Matt said flatly, is for my men to stay where they're wanted, not where they're an inconvenience. No, they stay, and you'll have no coin from me. If you want to go, you can take 1 horse each and a single pack horse to carry your things. I'll give you some feed for the poor beasts, and giving you that much is generous.
But with only 1 horse each, we'll barely be faster than the army, Jolene said.
Imagine that, Matt said. He turned away from her. Vannon, go and tell Mandevwin to pass the word. We'll be camping soon. I know it's barely afternoon, but I want the band far enough from that village not to be threatening, but close enough that a few of us can go down to feel things out. All right, Vannon said, with none of the respect he'd shown the bloody Aes Sedai. He turned his horse and began to ride down the line. And Vannon, Matt called, make sure Mandevwin is aware that when I say a few of us will go down, I mean a very small group, led by myself and Telmanis. I won't have that village invaded by 7,000 soldiers looking for fun. I'll buy a cart in the town and what ale I can find, then send it back for the men. There is to be strict order in camp, with no one accidentally wandering down to visit now. Understand? Vannon nodded, looking grim. It was never fun to be the one who had to inform the men that they weren't going to be getting leave. Matt turned back to the Aes Sedai. Well, he asked, you taking my kind offer or not? Jolene just sniffed, then trotted her horse back down the ranks, obviously turning down the chance to go alone. Pity that. It would have made him smile each step of the way to think of it, though it probably would have taken Jolene all of 3 days to find some sap in a village somewhere to give her his horses so that her crew could ride faster. Edesina rode away and Teslin trailed after, regarding Matt with a curious expression. She still looked disappointed in him, too. He glanced away, then felt annoyed at himself. What did he care what she thought? Telmanis was looking at him.
That was odd of you, Matt, the man said.
What? Matt said. The restriction on the men? They're a good lot, the band, but I've never known a group of soldiers who weren't likely to get themselves in a little trouble now and then, particularly where there's ale to be found.
I wasn't talking about the men, Matt, Telmanis said, bending to tap out his pipe against his stirrup, Dottel falling to flutter back onto the stony roadway beside his horse. I'm talking about how you treated the Aes Sedai. Light, Matt, we could have been rid of them. I'd count 20 horses and some coin a bargain to be free of 2 Aes Sedai.
I won't be shoved around, Matt said stubbornly, waving for the band to begin its march again. Not even to get rid of Jolene. If she wants something from me, let her ask with a grain of politeness, rather than trying to bully me into giving her whatever she wants. I'm no lapdog. Burn it, he wasn't. And he wasn't husbandly either, whatever that meant.
You really do miss her,
Telmanis said, sounding a little surprised as their horses fell into pace beside one another. What are you blathering about now?
Matt, you are not always the most refined of men, I'll admit. Sometimes your humor is indeed a bit ripe, and your tone on the brusque side. But you are rarely downright rude, nor intentionally insulting. You really are on edge, aren't you?
Matt said nothing, just pulled the brim of his hat down again.
I'm sure that she will be fine, Matt, Telmanis said, tone gentler. She is royalty. They know how to take care of themselves. And she's got those soldiers watching after her. Not to mention Ogier. Ogier warriors. Who would think of such a thing? She'll be all right.
We're done with this conversation, Matt said, shifting his spear to hold it upright, curved blade toward the unseen sun above, butt in the lancer's strap at the side of his saddle.
I just...
Over, Matt said. You don't have any more of that tobacco, do you? Telmanis sighed.
It was the last pinch. Good tobacco. Two rivers grown. The only patch of it I've seen in some time. It was a gift from King Roadrun, along with the pipe.
He must have valued you.
It was good, honest work, Telmanis said. And terribly boring. Not like riding with you, Matt. It's good to have you back, crust and all. But your talk of feed with the Aes Sedai does have me worried.
Matt nodded. How are we on rations?
Low, Telmanis said.
We'll buy what we can at the village, Matt said. We've got coin coming out our ears after what Roadrun gave you. A small village wasn't likely to have enough to supply the whole army, but according to the maps, they'd soon be entering more populated lands. You'd pass a village or two every day in those areas, traveling with a quick force like the band. To stay afloat, you scavenged and bought whatever little you could at each village you passed. A wagon load here, a cart full there, a bucket or two of apples from a passing farmstead. 7,000 men was a lot to feed, but a good commander knew not to turn down even a handful of grain. It added up.
Yes, but will the villagers sell? Telmanis asked. On our way down to meet you, we had a savage time getting anyone to sell us food. Seems there isn't much to be found these days. Food is getting scarce no matter where you go, and no matter how much money you have.
Bloody perfect. Matt ground his teeth, then grew annoyed at himself for doing so. Well, maybe he was a little on edge. Not because of Tuon, though. Either way, he needed to relax. And that village ahead, what had Bannon called it? Hinder's Tap? How much coin do you have on you? Telmanis frowned.
Couple of gold marks, pouch full of silver crowns. Why?
Not enough, Matt said, rubbing his chin. We'll have to dig some more out of my personal chest first. Maybe bring the whole thing. He turned Pips around. Come on.
Wait, Matt, Telmanis said, reining in and following. What are we doing?
You're going to kindly take me up on my offer to go enjoy ourselves at the tavern, Matt said. And while we're at it, we're going to resupply. If my luck's with me, we'll do it for free. If Egwene or Nynaeve had been there, they'd have boxed his ears and told him he was going to do no such thing. Tuon probably would have looked at him curiously and then said something that made him feel his shame right down into his boots. The good thing about Telmanis, however, was that he simply spurred his horse forward, face stoic, eyes betraying just a hint of amusement.
Well, I've got to see this, then,